Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to what was the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
Bernard.
Ben Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould. What was that, Ben?
What? Oh, sorry, I thought we were done. We were done, so I turned off talking.
I see your confusion there. Welcome to the eternal purgatory. Welcome to the eternal purgatory. Tim has fallen into it. Johnny has fallen into it. Ben, you were already into it, let's be honest. Welcome, all of you, to the never-ending content cycle as you try to rest and are permanently denied. How is everyone?
Honestly, not bad, as I actually did have some rest over Christmas. I just lay on a sofa like a Victorian lady for several days, and it was great.
I really hope it was on a proper chaise longue.
No, it was not on a chaise longue.
A chalongui?
Oh, sorry, my bad. It is a chalongui. My apologies. So, we are going to be answering a bunch of listener questions today.
Wait, I was actually too sleepy to, like, genuinely, you're asking how people are. It's worth flagging. I have post-COVID fatigue and my brain is slow. I'm thinking through a blanket, if you can imagine the thoughts, stuck in a cloud.
A relief not to be playing Cell today and talking at speed.
Genuinely, I was thinking, like, I could not do any of my character voices like this. No.
You could maybe do Sasha specifically when she was becoming a lich.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And remember, I think I played that so well and realistically because I did have a chronic fatigue episode at the time. Like an enormously bad one. Like, so many people were like, oh, it was done so like realistically and sensitively, and I'm like, that's because I was really feeling
So we are going to exonerate ourselves from all responsibility for organization. You know, this isn't a curated experience anymore. This is chaos. So we've managed to narrow it to 100 questions, and we're going to D100 this thing. We're just going to dice roll it, and then if all the questions answered are naff and you hate them, tough. I'm not responsible. So with that in mind, now, we do have an extra system here, which is in the event of doubles, Brinicus Law Maximus has in fact got a series of his own questions, which will trigger in the event of doubles. I don't know what those questions are. No doubt they'll be too specific and I'll be annoyed.
I'm very angry that I don't have priority. I feel like I was here first.
How do you not have priority? You're counting as a critical.
Literally before there were fans, and my questions should therefore come first. I mean, it's just a question of how long I've waited versus them.
What I really, really like is that in the final Q&As for our Pathfinder game, we've swapped to a percentile system with doubles as critical.
We're playing Dark Heresy now. Come on.
I don't know what you mean. I've got a D20. I've got 20 questions because I understand the assignment.
You don't have a D20. You have a 20-sided mace. It's enormous.
It is. It's a giant D20. It's great.
Brynn is just perpetuating this Pathfinder nightmare that I'm stuck in.
Oh, you and me both,
right.
Ben.
I'm going to roll our D100 and we're going to see where we end up. Okay, question 18. Lydia, this one's for you.
Ooh. Unexpected.
It's so big. It's such a big question. Okay. What was Sasha's backstory and connections? Who were her parents? What was up with her training by Rakefine and Eldarion? How much would the ending have changed if she had been around? What was the deal with Rakefine's will? That's not a question.
That's not a question at all.
That's not a question for me. That's a question that I would have prepared. Like, that is a question that I literally sent Alex, like, via Teams.
Is this your question?
Like, from me.
In fairness, this is a Lydia Alex one, but I am still taking umbrage with a question should end in a question mark, not six. Well, I'm going to do our best to get through it, but this is smacking of shenanigans
early. I think that this will actually be two questions, which is, like, how am I so brilliant at writing backstories with multiple plot hooks? and that I can't answer. I'm brilliant at it. Are you just born with it? but the other one is, how many of the hooks that were left did Alex actually write and weave in, or how many did he leave? Because when Sasha, like, spoilers, is trapped in Rome, I asked Alex if, like, who Sasha's dad was, because I left that a mystery. And he said, there is so much to be revealed. And then he has revealed literally nothing.
You kept killing everyone who was going to reveal. Right, let's dig into this.
Or
let's
it was Einstein all along.
Well, that explains rogue space.
Yeah.
So the first question of what was Sasha's backstory and connections, that one's too broad. It's like, that's covered by the other questions.
It's
so
literally available, I think, on either online or via Patreon, like the backstory that I wrote. I didn't understand when Alex asked for backstory that most people's response to the questions would be like a sentence, but I think I wrote you like 5 pages.
You always do that, and it's great. It makes my life a lot easier.
Yeah, and like I always say, it doesn't matter if all of it isn't woven in. It's like I like the unpredictability of some bits will be used and some won't. So I wrote Sasha lives, like at the point Sasha has been mostly raised by her uncle in the criminal gang. She doesn't know who her parents were, although she has a sense that they were people that were very important, and that in a way sets her apart. And then her burgeoning skills set her apart, and then like she's held captive, and then mysteriously she gets moved to somewhere else. In a similar way to like with Cell, you didn't tell me what to do, but when I said where would it be useful for them to come from.
Oh yeah, and you established that I forgot the world was round in your backstory temporarily.
Yeah, that was quite entertaining. You're like, yeah, and then like you go via New York straight to Japan. I'm like, there's no.
That's a really stupid route, Alex.
There'll be 20 years of them wandering around the world before that.
I'm going to reiterate something that's going to keep coming up here, which is I'm going to temporarily become Johnny Sims here. You know, the text is the text, which is basically a way of saying anything that has not been revealed in the series, I'm happy to talk about like what was loosely floating around in my head. Don't for a moment confuse that with this is what it is. If it isn't in there,
make it up.
Exactly. I can say what I had in the bag in case and things like that, but that's not the same thing as it being any kind of a canon. So just to keep reiterating that one.
Can I just clarify? I did not give Alex a reason that Sasha was removed and taken to Rakefine's.
No, not at all.
Thing. I didn't give a reason. I said that somehow, without her really understanding why, she was moved to like another relation and they tried to force her to be brought up as a fancy lady, and it didn't go very well.
Didn't it?
No.
Oh.
No. Like Eldarion did exist. Like there was a tutor because you wanted more names, but I gave nothing more.
So to lay out a few things, there could have been an iteration of the campaign where parents turned up, but because of the shape and the routes the people took, it was never going to, it just couldn't happen. The same way I didn't think that the Northern Wastes in inverted commas were ever going to turn up and did. Like, it's unpredictable. It has characters in it. In my head, I had pegged Sasha's parents as probably being Harlequins, but not important ones. And I also had baked into the back of my head. So in the same way that the Northern Wastes turned out not to be the Northern Wastes, I was intending to play around with potentially like meritocratic prison systems and so on, and the idea that like one of her parents could have potentially have been imprisoned and what would that have looked like and so on.
Rake Fine was an important Harlequin though.
Rake Fine wasn't a parent, to be clear.
He was another like great uncle.
Let's just separate it out. So yeah, biological parents, I had sort of buried in the background somewhere the idea that I had them pegged in my head as being minor Harlequins who had ended up being imprisoned. And then I could have unpacked that, but it was very clear that this wasn't going to happen by the end. So I wasn't going to force it.
Oh yeah, the will and everything being trained
so
up.
The list only finally got to be revealed, I believe, Bryn. It was part of... Was it Epilogue 2?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so that was in Epilogue 2. I finally got to drop that one. But in terms of what was up with the training by Rakefine and Eldarion, I think that's been covered, really. Like, from my end, it was, you know, Rakefine was effectively genuinely being quite fatherly, but also kind of building a Harlequin out of Sasha.
Training a secret agent to influence high
society. That's what I thought, like an infiltrator kind
of thing. Exactly. But I will admit, I was frustrated with Eldarion. Because Eldarion was... I can't remember if this has been mentioned. One, Eldarion was going to turn up in Eiffel's Folly and didn't. That was going to be Eldarion's entrance. And I was like, damn it, this story works without them. Okay, you can go away
Eldarion
for a while.
Was going to turn up underneath a pyramid.
Eldarion was actually holding the Cloak of the Bat the whole time.
You joke. I did experiment with whether Eldarion could come in via pyramid. And then was like, nah, that's not going to work. And then when Eldarion did come up, it's immediately like, I have so much to tell you. So, like, that wasn't intentional, to be clear. That wasn't like a ha-ha-ha tease. But in terms of, yeah, Lydia, you didn't really give backstory that pre-wrote everything out. You just said, I think this is cool. We'll figure out how that fits in. And that was pretty much it.
With that, and even, and similarly with Cell, like, I tend to write things of, like, these are the big beats in their life, and some bits will be a mystery to them.
Yeah.
And also, I really like writing stories where not everything gets revealed.
Every single one of you has that in your character in one way or another, something that didn't come up or something that kind of half came up, and I'm okay with that.
Chris had a whole family.
Yep. So in terms of the Rake Fine's will thing, I think we answered that one. Here's one that I think is entirely on you though, Lyd, which is how much would the ending have changed if Sasha had been around?
I think the main difference would be Zolf's complete personality, like progression would be different, right?
I agree.
He'd have been a lot better off, I think.
There were a lot of moments where I thought like the emotional angle would be different. Sasha's approach to an understanding of the kobold situation would have probably focused a lot more on the like, how are you responsible for situations that you are trapped in where you do perpetuate harm? But so that I think that we would have just taken that in a different angle. Sasha would probably have been good friends with the kobolds in a similar sort of way, but I'd be a lot of the things would be different in. Like, Alex would probably have had to think up more ways of how we would have gotten an airship off the ground. Like, I suppose tweaking it in a way where maybe.
I mean,
it was
who knows if that
broken.
Would have even happened at all.
Yeah, we might not have opted for airship.
Like,
if
basically,
we didn't have
Cell. If you're going to change something like still having Sasha with us, the whole rest of the campaign potentially changes completely. Mm. Like,
because you don't have the mechanical skill.
Yeah.
I also think it's quite likely that Sasha would have died.
Well, I think also one interesting thing as well is Skrark may not have been as important because Skrark fulfilled the rogue role, and you don't want two rogues because then it's like fighting
with
a PC. So.
Or Skrark would have been there, but in an entirely different iteration.
Yeah, you'd have super mechanical. Like, I mean, all the kobolds were sort of set up to be scientists and they were doing science and engineering and keeping the place going, right? So we might have ended up with
was it Natan who was the really engineering one, or was Natan the one who liked loud noises?
Merc liked loud noises.
Merc, okay, yeah.
I remember that because he died.
Sasra was the one who wanted to be an alchemist. I don't think any of them were like more engineering. I don't remember one of them coming off more engineering than all the others, but I might be.
I think it was Sasura was the one who sort of connected with Cell the most.
Yeah.
So it came out kind of like that.
Sasura loved complicated technical puzzles. Yeah. But I think that the way that the kobolds as a whole was set up and what as a group they've been doing, like keeping the base going, it would have been perfectly able to have like a character emerge from that that could help with some things that Cell helped with, or it could have just gone in a completely different direction. Like, I don't know. You might have had a mission where Cell went off to steal the off switch from wherever and you do it.
Although the ultimate final choice would have been the same. You were always going to end up back at Westminster and you were always going to end up back at the sort of planar debate, let's call it, because I wanted the echoing of Mr. Ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted you to have had an interaction with Mr. Ceiling that went horribly because people didn't consider consequences and were behaving like murder hobos. Like, this is pre the game even being played, to be clear. And then it was the hope of returning to a similar situation, a little bit older, wiser, and more careful.
I think we were a bit more thoughtful than your classic.
Yeah,
D&D
I admit, I admit it. We ended up quite less murder hobo-y than I anticipated once the show got going.
Yeah, and Hamid was like, sod it, hit the off switch because he genuinely thought it was the best thing, not just because it's like, ha ha, monster.
They were harvesting brains from children. Look, I understand the debates about Mr. Ceiling potentially being redeemable in terms of teaching it morals, but they were literally harvesting brains from children. Like,
very morally grey. I don't know, he's very morally grey.
I really do enjoy shifting sympathy perspective as far as I can, just to see how far you're willing to go with it. I'm gonna close that question, otherwise we'll be here at our current rate. It will take us a few solid days of recording, so I am gonna draw a line under that specific question.
We might have to go quick fire in the end.
We'll go again. Hopefully not all of them are six separate questions.
That's true.
Okay, next question. 52. What's 52? This is from Sarcastic Pumpkin. For everyone, what would you consider to be the biggest moment for your character that changed them to who we see in the end? Like, what's their pivotal moment from there to here? And they said, Alex, feel free to answer for an NPC.
For Azu, it was the loss of Sasha and Grizzop, for sure. I think that really, really hit her hard in like a way that I didn't necessarily get to show, obviously, because Azu is actually quite a reserved character. She's actually quite bad at talking about
how she's
feeling.
I think we got the sense of that, to be honest. Yeah. I feel like that was clear in the performance, even if it was understated
at
times.
Well, that was the thing. Like, I was trying to show her learning how to, like, open up, but, like, yeah. I think that was definitely a turning point for her and made her sort of A, more determined, and B, more clingy to Hamid.
Yeah.
For sure. There was that, and then just an accumulation of all the other horrible things that she saw.
It's complex PTSD. It's a long-term experience.
Yeah.
Any other takers?
For Hamid, I mean, you know, well, we saw him constantly changing throughout the whole show, and I think everything contributed to that. But the one thing that I felt was the most crucial, not just to Hamid, but also to me as Hamid in a sense, because I tend to think in stories, especially when I'm in a role-playing game built about stories, but it was during the body swap episodes, it was what Skrark said to Hamid. It was, he said, you don't necessarily need to have a role.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
For both Hamid and me as Hamid, was just a free myself from the stories I've already been telling, both in and out of character, and, you know, give myself over to the story a bit more rather than trying to shape it where I want it to be. And so that affected me both in and out of character. But I think that was such a, you know, that felt like a real moment for me and for Hamid, I think, as well. And I think, you know, the other moment I love is just before the Garden of Yerlik, when Hamid goes to Azu and is like, are the meritocrats bad? which I loved. I was so happy we got there. But, that, you know, and obviously that was the culmination. That wasn't so much a moment. That was kind of the everything adding up and coming out as that question. But yeah, that one moment that's, and that one thing that Skrark said to him, I felt just really resonated in a really nice way.
To share a real human moment with you, Bryn, by the way, that you don't have to have a role thing, I can trace back to a piece of advice that you once gave me that stuck with me, which originally was given for board games, ironically, but has proven very good in life. And it is, play the game in front of you, don't play the game you wish you were playing. And you gave it me for, you know, like card engine building games. It's proven really good advice, but that I know that that was the cause that led to that thing coming back to you.
And yeah, it's something I try to do. You're absolutely right. In games, I try and do it. And in my life, I try and do it. But in RPGs, that's the time I forget it.
Yeah.
But that was, yeah, that was good.
For Zolf, I think it was two specific points. The first was leaving the party, because I mean, it obviously gave me an opportunity to change the source of the clerical power. And the second one, I think, is kind of talking to Wild in Purgatory. The Shadow Realm, because I think that was just quite an important conversation. But also, I think the journey is made up of lots and lots and lots of little things. There is no one big thing. Like, there's no turning point. It's a gradual process. So, you know, those are probably most major, but they're not the only ones.
Yeah, I kind of think for Sasha, similarly, it's lots of small things. I do come back to the kind of Grizzop weeping, you're more important than a thing bit, where like some of the lessons might have kind of begun to get through. But it's that, I think for Sasha, what was changing her was the fact that these were people that just kept turning up and kept coming back to help her and save her, even when she was like very literally self-destructive, like running into the thing with the bombs. And there's like, oh, you woke me up. Cool. Like, not in a, I don't think ever in a really conscious way, but just didn't value herself very much. And so the fact that people valued her and kept showing up was something that then meant she was able to kind of take the next steps of thinking through and working through issues. For Sel, their relationship with the party, I can't think of a kind of massive,
not really. Sel, by virtue of Sel's scale of life, that kind of, it resists that kind of a quick
change. I think there's genuinely moments in the epilogue where they're talking to people where that feels like some of the most reflecting that they've done, and that sort of, no, I just think that there isn't a moment that sort of stands out. I think they are changed by the experience, but not in a kind of like, ba-doom, I realise now.
I mean, in the third epilogue, I can't remember who it is. It might be Zolf gives you basically the same advice that Scrat gives Hamid, which is that you don't have to immediately go and do something. You can just hang out here. So that's an interesting parallel.
Yeah, you don't always need to be fixing something. You're allowed to kind of take a break.
Yeah.
It's a similar case for Grizzop. He didn't have a moment because his beliefs were absolutely ironclad, because I built him to be the opposite of Zolf. And he was a guided missile. That's it. He was Grizzop, and he was Grizzop until he died. Done.
He died how he lived. Two fingers up. to use with his bow.
Sure. Nice cover.
And killing somebody that he had decided was morally bad.
With absolute conviction.
Absolutely.
I think, for the sake of ease, I'll do Wild, because I suspect that's who people allude to a lot of time when they say to pick an arbitrary NPC.
You know, just any NPC. You know, any NPC.
To be fair, we know that Einstein's...
I think the most pivotal change in the jailer who looked after Zolf during the entire campaign. No, so for Wild, I think everyone will assume the answer is, oh, when he lost his magic.
Sorry, no. Also, very quickly, sorry to interrupt. But actually, thinking about it, that's probably one of the pivotal things for Zolf. That jailer giving him Harrison Campbell's, because that became a big start for a lot of things.
For such a throwaway bit, so became a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, back to it. But you just made me remember, yeah.
So yeah, for Wild, I think everyone would expect it's losing magic, and no. So let's bear in mind this is a fictionalized version of Wild. This is not actual Wild, obviously. This fictionalized version of Wild was actually an examination of the interrelation between responsibility, overwork, and burnout. Like, that's what this character actually was. And so as a result, losing magic didn't actually do that, because you look at how Wild responded. He responded by doubling down. He just works harder without the stuff he's got. Dying.
I'll do it.
Yeah, that's quite important, I think.
Where he's like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I give up. And then Zolf's, the chat with Zolf just being, listen, go back, but maybe don't make yourself in your own head responsible for the entire world. Who knows? Could do that. That was actually wild turn. Losing magic was a f***ing awful thing to happen, but it didn't fundamentally change his way of solving things, which was grind it out, whereas dying definitely did. For Wild, it was that. It's like, there's actually a very clear gear shift and you can tell it in the character. But yeah, everyone assumes it's the magic. It's not, because it's about how you deal with the world, not what. That feels like a superficial change. Okay, we'll go for a fresh question. Okay, I'm feeling this one.
Ooh.
34. So arbitrarily, because of the way it's laid out, the lower the number, the more popular the question, which is interesting.
Oh.
Okay. For the players only, which NPCs were the most fun to interact with, or do you feel had the most valuable interactions with? Which NPCs do you wish your characters interacted with them more? For me, are there any I'm just proudest of, effectively?
Okay, that's another one. There's four questions in one line there.
Let's focus in on, like, favourite NPCs. Were there any particular interactions? And leave it at that.
Most fun scene, and I think people talk about it, but yeah, Grizzop with the Harlequin cell in Damascus.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh, that was the worst. That was the worst.
Is there maybe a better Harlequin cell under this one? I loved it.
I forget about that one, but yeah, I did enjoy that one.
I loved anything to do with Einstein.
Yeah.
I also really love Chaucer. Like, I know he's a, like a late addition, but no pun intended. But
oh, no, come on, intend that pun. That's a brilliant pun.
But yes, love the fact that he wasn't like able to like express at all anything, and yet was still very dry and witty and gave us a nice dinner, which I always appreciate.
There weren't many of them in the campaign. There were a few, but there weren't many.
Also, I like a lich who's like, oh yeah, I'm a lich now, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
I mean, everyone loved Einstein.
Yeah
I really enjoyed the scene with Apophis. I would have loved to have more interaction with Apophis at another point in the campaign
too.
It would have been really cool to kind of see that different or changed, or yeah. I have to say, though, my favourite NPC was Skrark, and I loved interaction with Skrark. I really liked that Wild and Hamid started to become really good friends. And if I had to say which I wanted to see more interactions with, actually, I would have seen more of that just friendship, that, like, Hamid and Wild being mates, actually. I think that would have been nice, but not really time for it, not important enough to the campaign. Wouldn't have made sense, but...
Yeah.
I have a couple of pet ones, which is... I know everyone liked Ed. I liked the dynamic between Ed and Friedrich.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It very rarely got looked at. I love a classic double act. And there was a little bit of it, but not really. It mostly became the Ed show because he's too big a personality.
Well, you didn't bring Friedrich back when Ed came back. He could have been there too as an NPC.
I considered it, but it didn't quite gel.
Wait, there were two Friedrichs,
right? Yeah, there were. Yeah, there were. I don't mean that Friedrich. I mean other Friedrich.
Ed's handler.
Ed's handler, Friedrich, yes. Yeah, I liked that one. But
I'm pretty sure I've seen
much.
People say there's three Friedrichs in the campaign, because there was another one really early on too. That's the name we like.
There's two bit ones that I liked, though, which is genuinely the jailer with Zolf. I made a little note that he made a throwaway comment about his daughter getting a leather jacket just like Sasha's. I really wanted that daughter to turn up if they returned to London. Didn't happen, but that would have been nice. I made a little note there that didn't come off. And the other one is, I checked back through my notes, and don't hold me to this, I need to double check, because this has been so long ago. I think, if I remember correctly, the old man that beat everyone up,
What, one of the Lumiere brothers?
Genuinely was one of the Lumiere brothers. It wasn't just it could have been. I genuinely think they were written as one of the Lumiere brothers.
Sharp,
and it was an interaction that never happened. I kind of I didn't expect them to get away. So that interaction, weirdly enough, I chuckle at, because that took it in a much different direction very easily.
Yeah, in a way that's very similar to Bryn's, one of my favourite things was Sasha's gradual, like the developing relationship with Wilde.
That was great.
Moment of them having the puns on
I forgot that.
On the melted remains of the robot factory was kind of lovely. Genuinely really sweet.
I forgot about that.
You know what? Talking of sweet, the date with Kiko, just want to thank you again for just a wholesome, nice date.
Just one nice thing in the whole campaign.
I need you to fill in a feedback form on that, by the way. Like I said, that's the closest thing to a proper date I think I've like ever done. So feedback appreciated. I do intend to be a better person in future. And, you know, that's how we learn. Okay. We'll bounce on to our next question then.
I want to mention two NPCs I would have liked to seen interact with each other more.
Oh.
I wanted more of the Ed and Einstein show.
Yeah.
When they met in Rome.
Yes.
That was somehow incredible. And I know it's just too hard to like voice two NPCs interacting, but those two interacting with each other, I would have loved to see more of.
Well, I'll see if we can do a special for that or something, because that should be easy to do.
Also, just very quickly, before I get endlessly messaged about it, I said Charles Lumiere. That's not one of the Lumiere brothers. I got the name wrong.
Okay.
I said it in the background, but I know somebody's going to be like, you were wrong! It's Louis and Auger, or whatever his name is.
Well, to be really dark, I'd have to double check my notes that I reread like in the last few months. I think it may have been, the note I wrote was Lumiere brother, open brackets, not deceased, close brackets, which says a lot. Because I think the other one might have been killed off screen. I can't remember. It's so long ago and the notes are so incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
They might have got sealinged.
I think he might have been.
Because were they writing like, or take your photo? Yeah, they were investigating and then got sealinged, I think, maybe.
Yeah. I think one of them got sealinged and one of them managed to dodge it. It's been too long. And my notes are shocking. My notes are dire. Okay, I'm rolling.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so this is question 19. Lydia Brin. In the season 3 Q&A, Brin mentioned there was a character in Hamid's backstory that hadn't come up at all yet. Did this character appear in the show and who were they? What about the ones from Cell's backstory that hadn't come up yet?
No, the final character NPC I wrote was the big accident that Hamid caused at university, which killed a professor and a few other students, the son of the professor. Was supposed to be like bent on revenge.
Ooh.
Ended up being entirely unnecessary because the idea was, for me, was that there were like the three, there was Liliana, Gideon, and this other NPC that represented three different reactions to what Hammond had done. But given how Alex ended up, and that's how I wrote them, like one bent on revenge, one was disgust, and one was like complicity. And it was like, so the idea was, in my head, was, you know, I'm a sucker for a stupid romantic story, was, you know, Hamid and Liliana would meet and he would say, look, I've changed, I've you know, done some good, it doesn't make up for the bad, but I'm a different person, maybe we could try again. And then Alex brought her in and she was awful. And that was a really interesting story choice. It was great, loved it, not how I had imagined it going, and I didn't write how I imagined it going. Alex was free to do that, and it was a much better choice. But it meant that having another NPC who was like, what you did was awful, I'm going to kill you in response, not interesting, not worthwhile. Why bother bringing it in?
I was tempted to try and bring them in and then turn them into a romantic interest after they got over their initial rah response, but it never really slotted in. So yeah, we just kind of left that by the wayside. As for Cell, I think yours was to do with family, wasn't it?
Yeah, so with Cell, I wrote the characters that were there. A lot of them, like Cell's ex-fiance, were people that I assumed would either be dead or very old by the time the campaign happened. And basically, when I wrote Cell's story and was thinking about that, I just was very interested in playing a character for whom the adventure story that we're doing is not necessarily the craziest thing that's happened in their life. Mm. And for whom, like, this is something interesting, but it's part of a longer life and a longer process. And there's lots of, like, bits of stuff about care in Cell's past, because at the time I was working on, like, care sector policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the fact that, like, Cell ages differently, and I had, like, a lot in my head, which I knew would never kind of come out explicitly, about the fact that Cell's father aged faster, obviously, than Cell did. And so it was something I had a lot in my head about the complexity of having the elven mother that doesn't quite, like, understand or can't handle the fact that her husband is aging and changing, and that the husband might be scared to leave everything they know and go and kind of live in an elven community where everyone is forever young. And, like, that was actually a vastly more complex thing than, like, a divorce based on kind of an argument, but that there was, like, a lot going on there about how, and also there was a weird thing of, like, me feeling much older at the time of, like, coming up with Cell than I did at the time that I was coming up with Sasha. Like, Sasha feels like a younger version of me, and Cell is, like, an older version of me. And there was, like, four or five years in between. I went from someone in their mid-20s who hadn't done nothing like this before to someone, like, in their early 30s. And I just had this realization that, like, you grow past traumas. Mm. Like, they're still there, but you have lots of things in your past, and then sometimes you even experience things as, like, oh, this is wild. Like, but it doesn't have the ability to shake you in kind of the same way, because you know that you've survived similar. And I know sounds like ridiculously profound for, like, our Pathfinder game, but, like, a lot of that was, like, in my head of it's interesting to have something that profoundly affected someone, but they're not necessarily around anymore, or, like, the situation has changed and you can be happy again after, like, great losses.
Absolutely.
Or like after romances that, you know, like, I mean, the big thing is that Cell is really, at the beginning, is kind of, they've been grieving their late husband.
Mm.
And so there's lots of, like, I just, yeah, that's why I didn't expect a lot of people to come up. And, like, the stepsons, I really would have liked for them to crop up. But I also like the idea that there's just people that you love out there in the world, and they're not necessarily involved in everything that you do all the time.
Absolutely.
I like writing characters or thinking up characters with tendrils.
I think Cell was the most... Let me finish this sentence. Cell was the most disappointing character. Insofar as I think there was a lot more ground to cover with Cell, and a lot of stuff didn't come up organically. So one of the skills that you learn is you don't force it. You don't make, surprise, it's me, your long lost brother, all the time. It doesn't work. It gets very soap opera.
Sounds like what you mean, Alex, is you're most disappointed in how you handled Cell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, Cell's stuff didn't come up organically as frequently as I would have liked, so as a result it left the most untapped potential in there. Like, I think this will probably be a separate question, if you guys had chosen the Americas route, I would have pushed a lot more Cell backstory in, but because you didn't, that organic opportunity never really presented itself, and I'd have been forcing, you know, those people that you haven't seen in ages, they're in central London for some reason. Like, it doesn't quite gel.
So Sasha, like, talks about herself as being quite closed off, but actually these are the first friends she's ever had, and a lot of her emotions just come spilling out constantly.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh no, I'm so like reserved and quiet. By the way, here's my whereas, you know, like Cell, I imagine that on the Vengeance, Cell and Barnes were like lying in bed chatting about all of this stuff, and it just never came up around the party.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you know, that they just never, those aren't the people that they confide in necessarily. They care about them and love and respect them. But these people that they're on a short, wild adventure on are not necessarily the people that they say, by the way, I have dark, unsolved issues.
That I won't tell you about for at least 2 episodes.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. Next question. Oh, it's a popular one.
Ooh.
6.
Ooh.
Oh, bless. People asking questions like they think I know the answer. Who adopted Brutor after the campaign ended?
Oh.
I don't know.
Can Brutor have been a mascot for the Vengaboat?
Yeah, I can absolutely imagine him being a little ship pug.
Ship's pug.
Like, imagine him trying to get up the ladders between, standing at the bottom and, like wagging his stumpy tail.
Plus, he already had a little admiral's uniform. How else is he going to get the use out of it?
Exactly. People like, oh yeah. Well, of course we did say that it was a very accessible boat with ramps. Yeah. So I like the idea that maybe like my chickens, he hasn't actually quite worked out the way that you could go up the ramps. So he sits at the bottom of the ladders. Like completely refusing to work out how the geometry of the boat goes.
He's a dog that still expects to be picked up and carried up gentle
slopes.
Take me
up here. It's like you could walk yourself if you go to the other end of the boat. I can smell my food here. I'm not going away from it. Go up the stair there.
Well, there you go. Asked and answered.
I do enjoy questions going, what was your grand plan here? And going, oh, there wasn't one. There was nothing.
People do know like a lot of this is improvised, right?
Yeah. Wait, this is fiction?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it's another really low one. 8.
Oh.
Ben, did Zolf and Wilde ever go on holiday together?
Well, I mean, these questions are being asked before Epilogue 3 airs, so...
Clearly.
Yes, very much so.
I think it's pretty clear in Epilogue 3. That,
I think it's that question is covered by Epilogue 3.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Ooh, a niche one. All the way to 85.
Ooh.
This is from Rubexo or Becca. I'm not sure which one. We know from Into the Wilds how tieflings work in this world. Did you plan how other outsider races such as Sylphs and Azamars would work? Are the rarer races all present in the world, just not where the PCs went?
Oh my god.
But also, let's use ancestries instead of that term.
Yeah. So I'm going to unpack that a little bit, but I'm not going to go into huge amounts, which is, as a shortcut in my head, all of the obscure things of Pathfinder are in there, but again, probably in places the party didn't go. I would say now, they wouldn't work. Most of them wouldn't be working as written in the Pathfinder.
Aren't Tieflings and Azamar D&D specific? Because obviously Into the Wilds was run in D&D.
Oh, wait,
5.
No, you're right. It was D&D 5th. Hang on a minute. Maybe.
Whereas the rest of the campaign was Pathfinder. Oh. So I think there might be a
point.
Slight complication there,
ooh,
too.
So the issues
not
I
to
have
get all
with...
rules lawyer.
I can tell you now, though, that Azamar wouldn't be put here from God to make everyone's life, but like, I don't tend to engage with the game in that way. So I'd have probably come up with separate things. What I would say now is I generally would have addressed them as a rarity. Same as like Aquans did turn up in this. Mostly everyone was horrible to them for no reason.
I've just had a look quickly on the wiki. They are in Pathfinder, so it looks like it's not a Wizard of the Coast copyrighted term.
Lovely.
So what I would say is, yeah, those outsider groups would be in the story world just because I tend to operate like that, but I don't have big, elaborate, massive lore for like how Azamar work in this world, how various types of sylph work in this world. Like, I don't. I'd love to pretend that I did, but at some point I have to be real and say, no, that's an enormous amount of work for something that didn't even come up once.
It's good to remember that the party really spend the vast majority of their time in Europe and then in quite a narrow corridor,
Yeah, it's a very geographically specific.
And they're in specifically kind of meritocrat heartlands for a lot of the time. And I like the fact that there was this assumption that the northern wastes were empty, but actually it's just you just didn't know about what was going on there, and that knowledge was suppressed.
And that was always the plan for pretty much the entire world.
Yeah, so there's lots of places that they don't visit, and they don't.
And even like Cairo and Damascus, you know, they're not European, but given the colonialism of meritocratic society, they're, you know, heavily influenced by meritocratic Europe, whereas places further from Europe would not have been.
Yeah. Mm. So to answer the question, I think it's a fascinating thing, and I think better people than me have written fiction in dealing with these things, and I'd recommend people go and check them out. But from my end, no, there wasn't a massive, enormous, like, Azamar conspiracy that didn't get addressed, or the great Sylph uprising of O2. Like, no, that isn't in there. It could be,
well,
but it isn't in the text.
One of those things where we don't care until there's a PC, and then you're like, oh, okay, now I have to care.
Sort of. And I know that's a bit cynical, but yeah.
No, it's not. It's just an element of reverse engineering. No, that's just how you run like a game, recorded or not. I mean, I know some GMs love to really write out big lore, like, but I think a lot of people who are just casually running a game will be like, I don't care. Oh, now I have to care. Fine.
Okay. In that case, then, we'll jump on to our next question. So this is 41. This one's actually from a specific person. The others have been from, like, so many people. It was just many. So this one's from Book Squirmy. Lydia and Ben.
Is the book squirming, or, like...
Don't examine it. Just go with it. This is loosey-goosey. We're all chill about this. We just accept that it's a squirmy book, or it's about squirms. Who knows?
I think they squirm through books.
Right. How do you think your other character, so...
Who?
Sasha and Grizzop, respectively.
No, I've
would
got
have
two
reacted
other characters.
To the...
I need to.
Those are the ones they said specifically.
Oh, okay,
well, so Grizzop and Sasha specifically.
Okay.
How would they have reacted to the world post finale? So we're in our magicless afterworld. How would Grizzop and Sasha have responded?
No idea. Frankly, no idea. But that's because I'm quite reactive as a player. So I think I'd need to be playing the character in the moment, making those decisions. I can't. You know, if I thought something up and said it now, I don't think that would be true or honest. That's just me guessing at myself.
I think there's one factor for Grizzop, though, which is he took great pride, and there was a whole thing in Rome where he was like, you can't contact your god? How rubbish. Mine's right here. Pow. And it even came up again in the, like, fake Grizzop challenge thing. So he took quite a lot of self-worth from that connection. So I do think that it would have an effect. It wouldn't have just been I don't care.
Yes, but also he was also very intent on making the most of his life regardless. So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's it. I'd have to decide in the moment. Also, actually, to be specific about it, I think, because all of Zolf's character is angst about gods, I'd have specifically said, nah, sod it, it's fine. So the Grizzop was different.
You know what? That is a very you response. Yeah. Okay, fair point.
I think, interestingly, for Sasha, probably would have reacted in a very similar way to how she reacted to Rome. Like, they're now in a place without magicians, but all her skills are still relevant. Like, probably, yeah.
Yeah, Sasha still would have been one of the most powerful potential assassins in the world.
Exactly.
Like, she could have done whatever
she wanted.
It's
a world without magic, and Sasha's just there like, this feels like a you problem.
Fighters, rogues, and rangers are just like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Practical
finally
skills,
the great nerfing as it comes to being nerfed.
I can imagine that in a very similar way, having learned from the party's kind of morals, she would think more in terms of like running a security firm. And I can imagine her becoming more powerful than she really understands how to do, and becoming accidentally the big bad of a new chaotic world.
She becomes Barrett. Or the Barrett
I
can very much imagine her
I'd loved it.
Building something and not keeping control of it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of trauma there that still needs to work out.
Well, she apparently built the Harlequins.
Yeah.
And who knows
exactly
what her intentions for that organisation were and how that compared to how it ended up.
I can absolutely, it's very much in a kind of Avengers type thing. Like, after the first couple, pretty much all of the Earthbound problems are Tony's fault. like, in a similar sort of way, you know, she's got all these skills and accidentally gets involved in big stories and, I can genuinely see quite interesting kind of continuing stories for a lot of them, but that's because I'm not reactive like Ben is. I'm like, all of these deep thoughts. Wait, no, put them to one side. I need to actually keep aligned with what the story is.
We'll go to our next question then. Next question. 67. We're kind of a middle range. All the names of the meritocrats seem to be rough translations of the term dragon in one of the native languages of one of the countries they rule over. Most of these languages were developed after the fall of Rome IRL. Were the names of the meritocrats chosen because they were the names for the dragon in the region, or was the word for dragon in that language named after the meritocrat ruling over them? Okay.
Oh my
God. It's a chicken egg question, which is, Alex, did language develop where the words for dragon came from their names? Let's answer this for two separate time periods. When starting the game, no, Alex is really lazy. Like, Alex is really lazy and just looked up various words for dragon and made them names in the classic style of all lazy GMs everywhere. What I would say, though, is for what it's worth, I did consider the other, like, iteration, and I think it makes sense if you want to, like, have that fun little linguistic, but I didn't sit there and at the start of the campaign think in that detail. No, I just found
the dragons
words
are very old and have many names, and one of the ones that they use for formal occasions is like something that meant dragon early on in their rule of a particular area. But
also linguistics in the RQG world is nonsense.
Yeah. Oh,
everything
makes no
nothing
sense
works.
Yeah. At all.
There is a veneer of making sense and just everything completely falls apart immediately.
Yeah. if you chip at that very fine plaster, it is all woodworm.
History
underneath.
Changed too much. Languages wouldn't have looked the same. Countries wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
Everything about the world is a lie.
How did we massively change European history, and yet all of the towns and cities are just called the same thing and basically look like the ones now.
All right, now see here. Okay. I don't have anything to follow that up. I was hoping if I just made enough noise, people would pick it up.
How did we still have, like, the Eiffel Tower? What?
Yeah.
Also, Notre Dame was like, wasn't that a monument about Napoleon? Who couldn't have existed on the meritocratic rule?
Okay, there were various references to English monarchy at one point.
Yeah, just rubbish. Absolute rubbish. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah, but don't look over here. Look at this thing. Look at the shiny. Look, someone's doing magic fireworks. Look over here instead.
Love it. So
I think
good.
It's a good question. I think it makes sense and your explanation makes sense. But the brutal truth is, you know, like, nah, I just looked up the words for dragon in the regions that would make sense.
It's absolutely a thing. If you want a better answer, go have a look at fan fiction. People have thought about this so much more than we have.
If you want a better answer, don't listen to our Q&A. Whatever you can come up with. You have actually proved in that question that you can come up with a better and more, like, cohesive answer than a gang of improvisers who are mostly quite character-focused and were very much learning as they went along.
Remember that at this end, we're all spread very thin. It's a very broad and shallow world.
Yeah. And frankly, the thing is, if you change the world at some point, it would be impossible for us. Like, even if we all worked together as a team for several years, rewriting history, there's no way that we could have, made a world that made sense in any kind of way that, like, there's, it's an impossible thing to do. I often tell people that I'm doing consultations with, I'm just like, this is a very big task. Are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, like, it's feasible with 10 years of work in it being a completely different medium like a novel, but this isn't that, so just, sorry.
Yeah.
All right, next question. 78. I can see Bryn's hankering for the doubles, right? Okay, 78. This one's from Pebble. How and when did Guive get infected? Was it when she flew to Paris to torch Eiffel's Folly? I actually have a specific answer for this one. It wasn't when she flew to Paris to torch Eiffel's Folly. It came later. If you track a few references in the story to, like, oh, the riots have spread to Paris and blah, 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 it was once the riots hit Paris, there started to be a bit of a runaway problem and Guive was infected after everyone went into the time jump, but before they came back out of it. It happened in that away period, and it happened quite in the first half of that away period, but more specific than that, it never came up, so I never like fleshed it out beyond that. But that's the kind of time period it was more or less in. But yeah, Greave wasn't infected for ages and ages, but there will have been a chunk of time where the meritocrats will have been pretending that everything's fine, because that was their way of dealing with most things.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is 72. This is from Mile After Mile. Lydia, this one I think you'll be able to answer fairly straightforwardly. What would Sasha's thoughts on Barrett's death via, quote, freaky planar entity have been? Is that a good death, a bad death? Should it have happened earlier? What's Sasha's take on Barrett's death?
I think Sasha's take on Barrett's death was laid out in quite, and if I say so myself, quite direct speech. And the very fact that he kind of died as a side plot and didn't manage to derail things and was not as important as he thought he was just underscores the fact that she was right.
Little bit. I'm eminently happy that Barrett managed to die unwitnessed, off screen, with no attention, and you only find out after the fact. Oh, delicious.
Yeah, I think she'd appreciate that.
Next question.
Ooh.
A double?
Question 100.
Ooh. Does that count as a double?
That's a double.
Two zeros.
Yeah, it's a D100. You have to roll double zero to get that.
That's doubles. So we'll do the first question, then we'll do Bryn's doubles, all right? So the question's from Varia the Villain. Helen, who was Azu referring to when she told Kiko about a relationship where Azu didn't check and it ended badly?
Oh, right. So this is my NPC that never turned up.
Yes.
This was, I think she was a gnome. She was called Jex, and she is someone that Azu met in seminary and started a relationship with. And Jex thought that they were just like having fun and having a bit of a fling. And Azu thought that they were going to be together forever and then realized that was not the case and got a little bit heartbroken over it, and that's what she meant.
Is Jex the reason that Azu was distracted in seminary and kept failing all the religion checks?
Who can say? Me. Yes. She was thinking about her little gnome girl.
Oh, I imagine like a Monster Hearts game at that seminary school.
That'd be great.
What we're going to have to do is cut that and then do that as Patreon content.
Oh, that's a legitimately fantastic pitch for a bonus thing.
Yeah,
I love it. Oh, April, note that one down. Yes. All right. Bryn, you have been a patient bunny.
My biggest, heaviest D20 I've ever rolled. Thank you, Ryan, for this gift.
Sounded heavy.
It's so heavy.
What was the maths that Barrett was doing in the bloody cell in Damascus?
Oh no!
Yeah.
No! 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 Okay. Do you want the real, genuine, honest answer?
Yes. You were making stuff up and it had no connection to anything because you're a hack.
Oh no, I had it, but I'm an ass. It was all Barrett theatrics. Yeah. Look like you have a big grand plan. It didn't mean anything at all. It could have been a thing where if he was held to like knife point to explain it or whatever, it was all just a, yes, I'm a man with a plan. Look how esoteric I am. And then when someone turns up by fluke, he can go, yes, of course. And then he'll just do a little adjustment to the maths. It's all theatrics. It's
Excellent. That's actually and quite sorry a good answer. I like
yeah,
that.
Sorry, it's just that like, he's a, I'm going to swear again, he's a man who engages in that kind of parlor nonsense. That's what it was. It was theatrics.
Well, I thought it might have been was that he knew about the blue veins already and he was working out the exponential infection rate.
I think that's a better answer. And I really strongly encourage people to run with that because that's way
that
better than what
been
I had.
What Barrett event like would have told people if someone put a knife to
that's exactly the thing, though.
Realised he needed to come up with an explanation.
I actually love that as an answer. I think that's a really good one.
It's a very characterful answer.
He liked to pretend he had all the answers and he had very, very few.
Yeah.
He was all theatrics all the way down. It was, I always had him pegged as Moriarty without the integrity. That was Barrett. All flavour, no substance. That was a good question, Bryn. I hope we get more doubles. Okay, all right. 75. This is from Nosorgs. Who does what on the Venga boat? How big is the crew? And can we join? This is specifically for some reason to you and me, Lydia.
What is that makes sense.
I think that is something for whoever like that. I don't want to shut down any of the possibilities.
Right. I didn't have anything locked in my head, so there's one thing to be aware of when it comes to the epilogue at my end, which makes my life a lot easier. I genuinely just told everyone, look, tell me what you want to happen. I will then, in the background, make sure that no one has any direct contradictions and that nothing's literally impossible. That's it. That was my entire input. That was it. So as a result, I don't have any input on that at all.
My vague thought, the only thing that I would say is worth adding is that I think that probably Sasra is like first mate and is becoming more and more the de facto kind of runner of the boat, especially by the end, and that it's a relatively sort of smooth transition. But that doesn't necessarily need to be how it is. Maybe that is Sel's perception of it. I don't know. I just think I don't want to shut down any...
I mean, also, it depends on what time period they're talking about, because it's been running for a long time. People will have, like, as it was there for the first, you know, at least 5 years and then popped off.
I do know that in my own head towards the end, so this is epilogue 3, like, and this is a mental shortcut. It's not an actual, like, ruling or anything stupid. I, in my head, had them in a retrofitted aircraft carrier.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Like, that kind of a scale of, like, massive open space, probably retrofitted where it's, like, it's got farmland on it or whatever and things like that. But by the end, I genuinely imagine that the flagship's probably a big old aircraft carrier that's, you know, solar punked up and things like that.
Absolutely. That sounds awesome. I floated that idea in my head. I also thought of like big kind of flotilla of like where you do have some that are almost village like strapped together.
Yeah, because you had a Venga fleet by the end.
Exactly. I think go wild. if I say so myself, it sounds like a setting for.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay, I'm rolling and I'm rolling and. Ooh, 26. So a comparatively popular one. Alex, what happened to Curie? Curie turned, and then Curie was killed. I'm afraid. Curie got compromised as the Harlequins fell and was taken out, although I never went specific with it. It's not like Wild killed Curie or anything. But Curie ended up being eliminated by virtue of being turned and them not being able to, at that stage, know how to turn back, what was going on, etc. So that's the brutal truth.
Here's a slight mildly related question. Is question number one where Wild got that scar from?
I think it must be.
I couldn't possibly comment.
It is.
No, it's not number one. Okay. It's pretty damn close. Like, it's pretty damn close.
It's number one on my list.
I'm not going to answer that.
Ah.
I'm not going to answer it because... We obey the dice. I kind of hope it never comes up, just so I can be that person. Okay. 17. Where are we at? 17. Okay. Oh, this one's for Ben. You may know that baby goblins are a pretty popular concept around here.
Yeah, I've been on Tumblr.
When Vasik got kidnapped, how old/mature were the Clutch? How did they get on with both their parents missing/dead/wandering around Cairo with a young strapping orc while an infection raged? What happened to them after the change? Do they meet Emeka or Ishak or if it's all... Basically, give us the Clutch deets.
Unsatisfying answer. You probably know better than I do because they were never relevant. They were never filled out. And then Grizzop died and I stopped caring because I had to care about Zolf's stuff, right?
That's what we love and at you, Ben, is the wonder of the different ways that people approach these questions.
Yeah.
And it gives me joy every time that you're like so unashamed because I love that. I hope one day I can get to that level of like, no, I'm confident in my approach and I'm not going to apologise for it.
I have two things that I had sort of written in notes as a, like, so I use a technique called sandboxing, which people might have heard of before, which is where you've got your notes and then the final section is your sandbox. And anytime a random idea pops into your head, you slap it in the sandbox and you forget about it. And then whenever you're generating prep, you reconsult the sandbox, see if there's anything useful in there, and then you do the work. Mm. So I've gone back through and checked a few, and that some of the sandboxes are still in there. And I do have a couple of sandbox elements to do with this. So these weren't ones that got formally into but we just sat there. One was that I made a very explicit note that they were all fine.
Yay!
That was like a must be fine, this is not a good story otherwise, yeah. So they were all fine. I toyed with the idea of maybe the oldest of the clutch will have been mature enough to sort of shoulder that burden, and then that could have been a thing, but again, didn't amount to anything. And the other one which I toyed with, and this again, this is literally just the sandbox where I genuinely write things like, it'd be cool if, and then it amounts to nothing. I kind of always wanted to, but never found a way to connect Beaming Gusset to that clutch, because I thought that would have been a cool pairing of characters.
Yeah, they could totally connect, because Beaming spends time with Beseek.
I didn't. It's not just enough for them to connect, it's that they have to connect and be, like, visible as having connected, and so that extra bit was missing. But I think it would have worked, but I never managed to make that happen. It was just sat there in a sandbox.
I can absolutely imagine, like, particularly because Beaming's obviously got his shop and has lost his protege, and he
talks
to Beseek.
Yeah, I liked that idea.
I liked
the idea of those dots connecting, but yeah, never came to pass, unfortunately. All right, on that, we'll see you next week, and then we'll see if we can't get some more doubles for Bryn.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening. Was actually wild turn. Losing magic was a f***ing awful thing to happen.
Pardon?
But it didn't fundamentally change his way of solving things, which was grind it out, whereas dying definitely did.
We're going to beep that,
Did you
I'm
even
guessing.
Realise you said that?
What?
Yeah, you said f***. Oh, no.
Did I?
Yes. Would you like a take without a swear word, or do you want to
I don't
beep
even
it?
Know where I did. I've never done that on a recording
you
before.
You said losing magic was a f***ing awful thing to happen.
No, leave it. We'll bleep it.
Don't bleep it. Do we get one f***? Can we get a f***?
You cannot.
Oh. One cannot. Singular
this f***. About to go dark, right? Do we care anymore?
Yeah, f*** it. We'll get the explicit tag. Right.
No f***. No f*** given.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.